Well, happy Sabbath. And thank you, ladies, for that beautiful music, the expression of trust in God. I think you'll find it's going to connect. All the things are connecting well today. It's exciting when we have these opportunities to have some focused Sabbaths. We have this one where we're focused primarily on our teens. We're giving them opportunities to serve. And so today I have prepared a message that is primarily aimed at them. But if you're not a teen, I think you'll find that there is still something for you to hear in this. Our teens and our young adults today, they face a lot of social pressure. There are pretty high expectations in our culture for young people to be able to achieve independence. Right? In our house, we have... My oldest son, Braden, is starting his senior year this year, and so we talk a lot about getting rid of him. And we do talk about him moving out, and we're going to miss him greatly. But it's a part of what we expect of our kids as they grow, is that they are able to go out and be on their own. And so we do culturally talk a lot about them achieving independence. And there's stigma against, you know, this failure to launch, right? We have some pretty harsh cultural stigmas about that. But it's interesting because we're also living in a time where it is materially harder for young adults, for college grads, to go out and find full-time employment. I won't quote you numbers, but you can go look it up. Compared to even 10, 20 years ago, it's significantly harder right now. People have talked about 2025 being one of the worst years to graduate from college because of the job market and the cost of living and skills mismatch, AI replacing a bunch of entry-level jobs that normally, you know, people coming out of college might be able to take and get into. And so there's a difficulty that a lot of young people are looking ahead and looking at and facing, trying to figure out how they're going to achieve independence. And you couple that with things like the cost of housing. Median cost of a home in the United States right now, $446,000. Right? This is way up from where it's been historically. The average age of your first-time home buyer is 38 years old. Because people, first-time buyers, are aging up. So you've got all these factors combining that make it really hard for young people to achieve independence in the classic sense. So as you're looking forward and as you're looking at independence in that way, your quest is challenging. You're gonna be facing these difficulties, and you're going to be trying to figure out how do I get to this place of independence. But in your quest for independence, it can be very easy to aim at the wrong things. Be very easy. You start thinking about being independent, and you can get into a mindset that's not where God wants you to be. I was listening to a podcast this week with Dan Dowd, one of our pastor up in Wisconsin. He did a few podcasts with some young adults, I think, in the Oklahoma area, and it's called Bible Table Talks. And he did one on this topic. He talked about independence versus dependence with a young adult there named Zach. And Zach is somebody who is an achiever. He was a firefighter in the U.S. Air Force. He was deployed in Afghanistan in a combat zone there. He has a degree in mechanical engineering. He's pursuing a master's degree in material engineering. He was baptized back in 2018. So he's somebody who you can look at his resume and you can say, well, this guy's an achiever. This guy is somebody who he's out there and he's on this path of doing things where he's proven himself. And that was what he was trying to do. He was somebody who was trying to prove himself and his abilities and skills and show that he is capable of being self-sufficient, independent, But he said this. This is a quote from him. He said, "Personal independence is the pursuit of free will in this world, but it's a deception Satan has put on us. It's a pursuit of self." He talks about independence being really, if you get into this mindset that you are going to get out there and you are going to do these things and you are going to be independent and self-sufficient, that, you know, it's right there in the word. It's about self. It's about me. And you start to become self-reliant. And when you're aiming at those things, what happens is you become isolated. You become very isolated because you've made your world about yourself and what you're capable of and what you can do. And so you end up in a state of isolation. And isolation is actually a form of independence. And some people pursue it. They seek it. Right? They want to go out. They want to be so independent that they go out and they build themselves a hut in the woods somewhere, right? And then they start mailing bombs to people and doing crazy stuff. So don't, you know, that's not what you want to do. That's not what we're seeking, right? We're going to look at some biblical principles today that show that that form of independence is not, that idea about independence is not a biblical one. It's not a biblical one. The title of my sermon today is How to Live in Your Parents' House and Never Leave. And really, it's an encouragement to you, especially you young people, to me, be more dependent as you mature into adulthood and into eternity. And adults, I think you realize that this is us too. Right? As we mature, we are actually striving for more dependence, not less. And some of us have learned lessons the hard way, right? By going out and doing things ourselves and being independent and finding that kind of independence, that's not what we're after. Let's go over to John 14. We actually sang these words in the opening set of hymns. John 14 and verse 1. Jesus is talking to his disciples, and the imagery here is really interesting. He says, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me." He's saying, trust in me. You trusted in God, trust in me also. Depend on me, if you will. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. It's translated mansions here in the New King James. In the hymn, when we sing it, we sing, "In God's vast realm are many offices." But none of those really capture what he's talking about here, because he's referring to a custom in their culture where when a son married or a daughter married, it was pretty customary for them to say, "Well, we're going to make a space for you in this house, or we're going to add a room on to this house." And now the family's expanded. So you end up with actually, in some translations, it even says apartments, because that's kind of how it worked, is you would actually just sort of expand the house. So Jesus is saying, "I'm going to my Father's house and making places for you to live in that house. So you're going to come and live in your Father's house, ideally, forever, right? That's the plan." That's what he's saying here is that there is not, the idea wasn't that you go out and you be totally independent and find your own place. Right? It was actually the family expands and you know, you still have your own space in the house, right? You're not all in one room. But it expands and you live and work together. And as those parents grow older, you're probably taking care of them in that space. And then someday they die, and that's your space and your kids. You know, maybe you start expanding it out. I don't know. I know some of you parents are thinking, okay, surely you're not suggesting that they just stay in our house and mooch off of us forever, right? No, I mean, that's not the idea. That's not what anybody is aiming for. And in their culture, that's not the idea either. It wasn't like, well, you can't do your own thing, so I guess we'll put a room on the house for you, right? So let's reframe then what we are talking about a little bit, because we're not talking about independence, right? We actually, even if you move out, your parents don't want you to be independent. They want you to be accountable, right? As individuals in our lives, we want to be accountable for our lives. We want to be accountable for who and what we are. But we want to be highly dependent on God, and we want to be highly dependent on others who are also depending on Him. We want to depend on each other, and we want to depend on God. Right? This is really an important distinction in how you think about it, because as you get out there and you start thinking and moving toward independence, independence really means you're severing ties with something. Our Declaration of Independence, it says in the preamble to the Declaration, it defines independence really as dissolving the political bands which have connected, you know, us and Britain. That was how we defined independence, was a dissolution of these connections. We're severing ties. We're cutting the cord, right? And we talk about that. It's time to cut the cord. But that's, you know, independence is really not what you're after. You don't want to go out and sever connections with everything that you have been a part of as you've grown up, as you've matured. That's not healthy. That's not the thing that's going to make you stronger. You want to be accountable. You want to be accountable for your own actions and increase in accountability. Let's go over to Romans 14. There's a really good reason to learn to be accountable. Romans 14 and verse 12 simply says, "So then, each of us shall give account of himself to God." That's it. That's why you need to be accountable. It's because you will give an account of yourself to God. That means you're answerable. All of us are answerable for our own actions, for our own decisions. We have to give an account, and therefore we want to be more accountable in what we do. And of course, that will drive the kinds of actions and the kinds of decisions that we make. Luke talked about that in his camp talk. Right? You want to be the kind of person who can stand by the decisions that you make. Be accountable for those things. The other interesting thing about being accountable versus independent is that being accountable acknowledges that you actually owe something to God, and you owe something to the people around you. It says, intrinsically, I've been made in such a way that I actually owe it to the people around me in whatever state I'm in, wherever I'm at. I owe it to them to be a certain kind of person, to be a certain way, to be one who's going to include the new kids at camp, to be a person who's going to set a right example when I walk into my college dorm room for the first time. I actually owe it to those people, and I owe it to God. That's what accountability is, right? It's very different from independence. Independence says, it's just about me and what I want to do and my trajectory and my desires, and I'm going to figure those out and make those work. That's not what we're after. So I want to look at an example today that I think really gives us a lot of lessons, both in dependence, in independence of a proper kind, and in accountability. And that's going to be over in 2 Chronicles 17. So let's go over to 2 Chronicles chapter 17. And I want to talk about the life of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat was one of the kings of Judah. I think he's David's great-great-great-grandson. I think it's three. It's either three or four. Anyway, he's on down the line a little bit from David. And Jehoshaphat is a very good king. He's one of Israel's best kings. And his life is full of examples that I think we can draw on when we start to talk about growing in our dependence on God. You'll see it in his life and in his actions and some of the little things that are said about him even, that he was fully dependent on God, even when he made mistakes. Let's start in 2 Chronicles chapter 17 and right at verse 1. It says, "Then Jehoshaphat his son reigned in his place." So this is, his father's name was Asa, and Asa was a pretty good king, but didn't have a real good end. And there are actually some mistakes that Asa made that you'll find that Jehoshaphat learned from. And we can learn a lot from what he did with that. "So he reigned in place of Asa, and he strengthened himself against Israel." Now, at this point in time, Ahab is king in Israel. You remember, Ahab had his wife Jezebel, who's, you know, one of those notorious Old Testament villains. And Ahab himself is a pretty treacherous guy. Sometimes Ahab is painted as like a little bit of a weakling, that Jezebel was like the power behind the throne. But that's not accurate. Ahab is a powerful individual. Militarily, he's very powerful. There's Assyrian records of him being a pretty potent force. He's no weakling. He's also not a good guy. He followed in the ways of Jeroboam, and he was all into, steeped in paganism, and was not a healthy influence on Israel, to say the least. So when it says that Jehoshaphat strengthened himself against Israel, that's a good thing. That's a good thing that he did. It was a healthy sort of independence. Verse 2, "And he placed troops in all the fortified cities of Judah and set garrisons in the land of Judah and the cities of Ephraim, which Asa his father had taken." So he bolsters himself against these bad influences. Verse 3, "Now the Lord was with Jehoshaphat because he walked in the former ways of his father David. He did not seek the Baals, but sought the God of his father and walked in his commandments and not according to the acts of Israel." He wasn't doing the wickedness that was being done in Israel. He was seeking after God. He was striving to be dependent on him, following him, learning his ways. "Therefore, the Lord established the kingdom in his hand, and all Judah gave presents to Jehoshaphat. And he had riches and honor in abundance, and his heart took delight in the ways of the Lord. Moreover, he removed the high places and the wooden images from Judah." So he got rid of these things that were bad influences. These high places are places where people would go and offer pagan sacrifices, you know, sort of secretly, but everybody knew what was going on. You know, that was, he got rid of them. The parallel account in 1 Kings, we won't turn over there, but in 1 Kings it says that he banished the perverted persons that were present in his father's reign. So he strengthens himself against the evil on the outside, and he gets rid of all of the things internally that were going to drag people down. So point one, I guess, I got 6 points for you today. That way you can keep track of how long you have left. 6 points. The first thing you want to do is you got to sever ties with evil. We talked about independence being severing ties, right? This is the kind of independence you do want. You want to sever ties with the things that are going to drag you down. There are going to be people in your life that are moving a different direction than you. And you're going to have interactions with those people. You just will. You always will. It's not saying never talk to people who are, you know, doing wrong or whatever. That's not it. But those are not the people that you want to be dependent on. Right? There's a big difference between interacting with people, you know, being a light and an example to people, even working with people. You're going to have jobs where you end up working with people that you realize are not moving the same direction you are. That is different from depending on those people. If you depend on somebody that is moving a different direction than you, expect to move the direction that they're moving. Right? If you're literally leaning on somebody, right, and they move this way, you're moving this way. That's how it works, is if you're dependent on people that are going a different way, you're going to end up going that way. That's just how it works. So you have to be independent of the ungodly. Again, doesn't mean you don't interact with them, doesn't mean you don't work with them in certain ways, right? But you cannot be dependent on those people. All right, 2 Chronicles 17 and verse 7. Also in the third year of his reign, he sent his leaders, Ben-Hail, Obadiah, Zechariah, Nathanael, Micaiah, to teach in the cities of Judah. And with them he sent Levites. We're not going to read all the names. And with them, the priests. And so they taught in Judah and had the book of the law of the Lord with them. They went throughout all the cities of Judah and taught the people. He sends leaders in his realm. He sends Levites and priests out into Judah to teach people about God. This is really something that you would think every king would do. And every good king should do this sort of thing. Make sure the people understand God's way. Make sure that it goes out. Make sure that they know what they need to know so that they're on the right track. He was acting accountably, right? With accountability. That's point number two. Act as one who will give account. We talked a little bit about accountability already. But act as one who will give account. Now, he was a king. So, you know, any of us, can we organize to have, you know, the leaders and the Levites and the priests go out and teach all the realm, right? That's not within our grasp. But we do have things that are within our grasp. We have things that we can do that are our responsibility, right? That are our power. We have influence on our friends, on the people around us. There are things that we can talk to them about. There are things that should be on our lips. There are times where we can give an answer when it's usually easier and less conflict to just hold back a little and not talk about. Right? But in all things, right, there are things that we can do that we will need to give account of. Right? So we want to be able to give account. Keep in mind, it's really not about, you say, well, I'm never going to be doing these big, great things that are written about here. But it's really not about how big or how great the thing is. Right? Jesus, when he talks about this parable of the talents, it's not about, oh, how many talents did you have, and I expect really, really big things from the really big people. He just expected people to take what they were given and do something with it. That's the expectation of any of us, is to be able to take the things that we've been given, be accountable in the small things. Right? Jesus says that, you know, if you're faithful over little, right, you'll be trusted with much. Being accountable in the small things is very meaningful. And especially as you are starting into adulthood, right? As you're moving toward adulthood, you're going to find that if you are accountable in the small things that are in your control, people will notice that. People see that. They recognize he did this thing. He took care of this thing without somebody needing to tell him that that's what he should do. And he just took care of it. Or she managed this thing over here, was very diligent about it. And yeah, that was the job, but wow, did she knock it out of the park. Right? It'll be some small thing, and you'll be accountable in that. And you will find that people recognize it, and people will give you more accountability, right? More responsibility. So be accountable in the small things. Act as one who will give account. Verse 10. And the fear of the Lord fell on all the kingdoms of the lands that were around Judah, so that they did not make war against Jehoshaphat. And some of the Philistines, now this is like Israel's classic enemy, right? Some of the Philistines brought Jehoshaphat presents and silver as tribute. And the Arabians brought him flocks, 7,700 rams and 7,700 male goats. So they came and they're appeasing him. Something that you can expect. Luke talked about it in his camp talk. If you start to sever connections with the wicked, right? And if you start to cut off some of those connections, you can expect that people will actually want to reach back out to you. They'll want to connect with you. Right here, we see he's establishing himself and strengthening himself, and the people around him are like, oh, well, we should definitely find favor with this guy. We should get him on our side. Right? People will come to you, and they'll want you to be their friend, right? Which means you'll have to be a little careful. What Luke said was, obviously, it's not like he's severing ties with the wicked, but you notice he did say that he started to distance himself from some of the behaviors that maybe are not ideal, and that those people actually respected him more for it. You can expect that. You can expect that when you start cutting ties with things that are not moving the direction that you're moving, and you start acting accountably, it will attract attention, it will attract favor, and not always from the people that you want it from. And that's what we get to when we get into chapter 18. Let's go to 2 Chronicles 18. Here's our third point. Be cautious when introducing new dependencies. Be cautious when introducing new dependencies. 2 Chronicles 18 and verse 1. So Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance. And by marriage, he allied himself with Ahab. What? Right? We just read at the beginning of chapter 17, he strengthened himself against Israel. Right? He had fortified himself against Israel. So now, he allied himself with Ahab. It doesn't say explicitly, but I would find it hard to believe that this is Jehoshaphat's doing. Right? This is in Ahab's best interest. This is how kings curry favor with other people. It's like, oh, hey, well, how about I'll give you my daughter, and we can be pals. And Jehoshaphat apparently went for it. And his daughter, it turns out, if you look up her story, she was a train wreck. And she was a disaster for Israel later. She tried to kill off all the descendants of the kings. One was rescued away. I mean, it's bad, right? That's Ahab's daughter. So that's this marriage that's being referred to. By marriage, he allied himself with Ahab. He was not cautious when he was thinking about who he was going to be dependent on. When you give one of your dependents to somebody else in marriage, you have introduced this dependent relationship, and now you're dependent on this. He was dependent on this other king. 18 of verse 2, after some years, he went down to visit Ahab in Samaria, and Ahab killed sheep and oxen in abundance for him, and the people who were with him, and persuaded him to go up with him to Ramoth Gilead. That's one of their enemies, the Syrians. He's saying, why don't we come fight? Big lesson here is beware when you are wined and dined. If somebody is wining and dining you, they want something from you. And that's exactly what was happening here. He goes down, Ahab has this big feast, and says, hey, why don't you go up with me and let's help fight off some of our enemies. So Ahab, king of Israel, said to Jehoshaphat, will you go up with me against Ramoth Gilead? And he answered him, and he said, I am as you are, and my people as your people. We will be with you in the war. So he commits himself to this thing. He says, I'm in. And then maybe realizes this is a bad decision. We find out later this is indeed a bad decision. One of the prophets comes and confronts him and says, that was a bad decision. But what we find here is that verse 4. Also Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, please inquire for the word of the Lord today. He's already committed himself, but then he's like, oh, wait, we should ask God about this. Please inquire the word of the Lord today. Then the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, 400 men, and said to them, shall we go to war against Ramoth Gilead, or shall I refrain? And so they said, go up, for God will deliver it into the king's hand. But Jehoshaphat said, is there not still a prophet of the Lord here that we may inquire of him? Jehoshaphat looks at these 400 guys and realizes, these are not God's prophets. These are other people, prophets of Baal, of who knows who. But he looks and he realizes, wait a second, this is not right. And we see through this story, he's made a mistake, right? He's allied himself with the wrong people, and he's committed to going to battle. He's been a little bit foolish, but what you see through it is that he is still very dependent on God, even after he's made his mistake. He's very dependent on God. Here he picks out the fact that, like, no, this isn't right. There's got to be somebody. There's got to be a real prophet that we talk to. Who is it? Is there someone? Verse 7. So the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, there is still one man by whom we may inquire of the Lord, but I hate him, because he never prophesies good concerning me, but always evil. He's Micaiah, the son of Imlah. So we get this interesting contrast. Jehoshaphat, who's going to be highly dependent on God, and Ahab, who is actively resistant against God. And we'll see the outcomes for these two guys. But just sort of keep that in your mind. You've got this one guy who's going to be very dependent, and one guy who's very independent. And one guy who says he even hates this prophet. He hates the prophet of God. And Jehoshaphat says to him, let not the king say such things. He recognizes, even if you're getting bad news from God, you don't speak ill of his prophets. You don't, like, that's not how it should go. He's still very respectful of God. He honors God. He depends on God. Let not the king say such things. Then the king of Israel called one of his officers and said, bring Micaiah, the son of Imlah, quickly. And the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, clothed in their robes, sat each on his throne, and they sat at a threshing floor at the entrance of the gate of Samaria. And all the prophets prophesied before them. And Zedekiah, the son of Chenah, had made horns of iron for himself, and he said, thus says the Lord, with these you shall gore the Syrians until they are destroyed. And all the prophets prophesied so, saying, go up to Ramoth Gilead and prosper, for the Lord will deliver it into the king's hand. Then the messenger who had gone to call Micaiah spoke to him, saying, now listen, the words of the prophets with one accord encourage the king. Therefore, please let your word be like the word of one of them and speak encouragement. Right? He's got this voice whispering in his ear saying, just everybody's saying the same thing. You don't need to, don't rock the boat. Micaiah said, as the Lord lives, whatever my God says, that I will speak. Then he came to the king, and the king said to him, Micaiah, shall we go to war against Ramoth-Gilead, or shall I refrain? And he says, go and prosper, and they shall be delivered into your hand. And there's probably some sarcasm in that, because look at Ahab's response. So the king says to him, how many times shall I make you swear that you tell me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord? He doesn't ask this of his 400 guys. He asks this of the one guy. And then he said, this is Micaiah speaking. He says, I saw all Israel scattered on the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And the Lord said, these have no master. Let each return to his house in peace. He's just prophesied Ahab's death. He said, their shepherd is gone. And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, did I not tell you that he would not prophesy good concerning me, but evil? He says, this is why I hate this guy. I hate him. He's just always giving me bad news and telling me bad stuff. And so does he listen to him? No. Ahab's a very independent person. He's going to figure things out himself, as we will see. He's going to do it his way. He's not going to listen to God. He's going to depend on his own cleverness, his own schemes, his own plans. But Jehoshaphat here, he's stuck. He's stuck in this alliance with Ahab, and he's already committed to him that he's going to go up. So here you have this prophet who has come and said, this isn't going to go well for you, but he's already said, I'm going to do it. And so we see he's going to do it. Verse 28, so the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead. So they go up, and they're going to have a battle. Now, so my point here is just, really just be careful about who you let in. Right? Be careful about who you depend on. The thing is, we need other people. We really do. All of us need other people. If you go and try and figure out life without depending on other people, you're going to be very lonely. You're going to be very miserable. You're going to have to work very hard, right? It's going to be awful. But you have to be wise about who you let influence you. You have to be discerning about their motives and about their goals. Are you walking on the same path? Right? If you're walking on the same path, going the same direction, things are going to work, right? You're moving the same direction. They're going to be able to help you. You'll be able to help them. Go on the same path. Great. But if you're on different paths and you're depending on them, at some point, those paths split. And you're either going to stay on your path and they're on theirs, or you're going to leave the path you're on. So be careful. Be careful when you're introducing dependencies. Point four, when you've been foolish, lean hard on God. 18 and verse 28. So the king of Israel, Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead. And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, Here's this clever plan. This is Ahab being pretty clever and pretty brilliant. I will disguise myself and go into battle, but you put on the robes. So the king of Israel described himself, and they went into battle. Now, why would Jehoshaphat agree to this? I have no idea. Right? Why would you agree and say, oh, yes, I'll just put a big target on me, and we'll go into battle? But that's what he agreed to. Verse 30, now the king of Syria had commanded the captains of the chariots who were with him, saying, fight with no one small or great, but only with the king of Israel. Okay, so this is like the worst possible combo. Right? You have this clever plan where maybe Ahab knew that this was coming. I don't know. But Ahab knows, I'm going to lay low, and you look like the king. And the other king has said, only attack the king. We just want to kill that guy. Just going to kill the king. And Jehoshaphat has agreed to this for reasons beyond our comprehension. So it was, verse 31, when the captains of the chariots saw Jehoshaphat, that they said, it's the king of Israel. Right? Ahab's plan is going to plan, and it's going to work out great. Therefore, they surrounded him to attack. But Jehoshaphat cried out. It's not a right? It's not a big, we don't get a lot of words. We just get that, and Jehoshaphat cried out, right? But here we see he's really has been dependent on God, right? He's made some dumb mistakes, but here he realizes he's in the thick of it, and it's pretty bad, and he cries out to God in the thick of battle. And it says the Lord helped him, and God diverted them from him. So even in the worst possible conflation of problems, here he cries out to God, and God is able to solve all of those problems, right? To take them away, because he relied on God, right? And this wasn't just a, like, oh no, now I'm in the foxhole, and God, if you're there, and you'll save my life, right? This was his life. This was how he lived his life, largely, right? Dependent on God. And so he cries out to God in the thick of this. He knows he's got no other choice. This is it. And God saves him. So when you've made some of these foolish mistakes, just really lean on God. Really depend on him. And watch what he does. Verse 33. So here's the contrast. Here's the really neat contrast between Jehoshaphat and Ahab. Jehoshaphat makes really foolish decisions, and yet God saves him out of all of them. Ahab has made pretty clever decisions. He's got a really smart plan, right? Now a certain man drew a bow at random and struck the king of Israel between the joints of his armor. So he said to the driver of his chariot, "Turn around and take me out of the battle, for I am wounded." The battle increased that day, and the king of Israel propped himself up in his chariot facing the Syrians until evening, and about the time of sunset, he died. So he's got the great plan. He's going to lay low. It's all going to be great. And is it really at random? It says this guy drew an arrow at random. Is it the hand of God? God had prophesied this would happen. It's a little murky whether it's at random or whether this was God's hand at work. But the thing is that both of those, randomness or the act of God, both of those things work against those who are independent of God. If you are independent of God, you have no backup. Right? Jehoshaphat had backup. He got into the worst of it, and he cried out, and God saved him. God was the protection that he needed. Ahab had his own little devices, his own way of doing things, but he had no backup. He had no protection. Random time and chance, those things will take down even the smartest, most clever of people. Chapter 19, verse 1. Then Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, returned safely to his house in Jerusalem. So he survives it. And Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said to Jehoshaphat, "Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Therefore, the wrath of the Lord is upon you." He may be referring to this whole situation that had just happened to him, saying, here's why all this bad stuff happened to you. Is you made a bad decision. You made a bad alliance. You allied with the wicked. Verse 3, "Nevertheless, good things are found in you, that you have removed the wooden images from the land and have prepared your heart to seek God." It seems like his alliance with Israel could have brought some sort of spiritual compromise. Right? Maybe it gave people license to say, oh, we're back in good with Israel. We can do things that they do. It's hard to know for sure, but he comes here and he condemns him for it. He says, why should you love the wicked? Go back to chapter 16 real quick, because we find an interesting thing. This is one of these moments where Jehoshaphat seems to have learned something from his dad, or at least by watching his dad. Chapter 16, verse 7. At that time, Hanani the seer came to Asa, king of Judah. Now, remember, what we just read was Jehu, the son of Hanani the seer, came to Jehoshaphat. So here we have one of the guy's dads coming and talking to the other guy's dad, right? Hanani's dad is coming and talking to Jehoshaphat's dad. So Hanani the seer came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, "Because you have relied on the king of Syria and have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Syria has escaped from your hand." So he had decided that he was going to, instead of relying on God, he made an alliance. He made a military alliance. In some ways, maybe similar to what Jehoshaphat had done in allying with Ahab. But he comes in, Hanani tells Asa, he says, "You haven't relied on God, and therefore the army of the king of Syria has escaped. Were the Ethiopians and the Lubim not a huge army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand." Talking about an earlier episode, saying, when you trusted in God, God delivered you. He delivered them into your hand. You won. "For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal. In this you have done foolishly. Therefore, from now on you shall have wars." Then Asa was angry with the seer and put him in prison, for he was enraged at him because of this. And Asa oppressed some of the people at that time. So here Asa is confronted by a seer who says, "You acted foolishly. You made mistakes." And Asa throws the guy in prison and oppresses the people. Okay, let's go back. Go back to chapter 19. Because Jehoshaphat, basically, we see him playing out this same pattern, right? Jehu, the son of Hanani, says, "Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord?" Verse 4. "So Jehoshaphat dwelt at Jerusalem, and he went out again among the people from Beersheba to the mountains of Ephraim and brought them back to the Lord God of their fathers." Verse 5. "Then he set judges in the land throughout all the fortified cities of Judah, city by city." So what you're finding here is that rather than being angry with the messenger and throwing him in prison and oppressing the people like his dad had done, he listens to him. He accepts it, and then he goes out and he brings the people back to God. Right? If there had been some license for idolatry because of their alliance with Israel, or whatever may have happened, he goes out and he's going to make sure that people come back to God. So here's point 5. Own and correct your mistakes. It's a big part of accountability. When we make mistakes, you got to own them. And be willing to go out and correct them. Verse 5. "Then he set judges in the land throughout all the fortified cities of Judah, city by city. And he said to the judges, take heed to what you are doing, for you do not judge for man, but for the Lord who is with you in the judgment. Now therefore, let the fear of the Lord be upon you. Take care and do it, for there is no iniquity with the Lord our God, nor partiality, nor taking bribes. Moreover, in Jerusalem, for the judgment of the Lord and for controversies, Jehoshaphat appointed some of the Levites and priests and some of the chief fathers in Israel when they returned to Jerusalem. And he commanded them, saying, thus you shall act in the fear of the Lord faithfully with a loyal heart. And he gives them instructions on how to deal with the people and how to judge righteously. Right? He goes out and he makes sure that he reestablishes knowledge of God in the land and right judgment. At the very end of verse 11, he says, behave courageously and the Lord will be with the good. He gives them that encouragement. Right? So he's again, fully dependent on God. He knows God will set things right. He knows that if you lean on God, if you depend on God, right, if people know his ways, if people understand it, if people will judge righteously and make good and righteous decisions, things will be good. It will go well for the good. That's what he's telling them. But you see, he had to go out and reestablish these things. Right? This is referred to as Jehoshaphat's second reforms. We read about his first reforms there in chapter 17. And here, it's like he went out and just reset everything. After he had been confronted for allying with the wicked, he listened to Jehu. He acknowledged what was said. He depended on him. That was one of God's prophets. And we know that he was willing to seek out and hear God's prophets. When someone that you depend on, when someone that you have a good, healthy, proper dependence on, who's moving the same direction as you, when they correct you, when they give you direction, take action. Take action. That might be God's direction. Right? God works through individuals. He works through people. Sometimes when we hear correction, right, I mean, generally, when we hear correction, it's going to be good for us to at least give it some serious consideration. But if you get correction from people who are the people that you depend on, who are moving the same direction that you are, you got to act on that. Got to act on that. Chapter 20, verse 1. It happened after this that the people of Moab with the people of Ammon and others with them besides the Ammonites came to battle against Jehoshaphat. And some came and told Jehoshaphat, saying, "A great multitude is coming against you from beyond the sea, from Syria, and they are in Hazan Tamar, which is in En-Gedi, wherever that is." And Jehoshaphat feared. So there's this great army that is coming against Jerusalem. This is one of my favorite chapters in the Old Testament. And we're going to go through a little bit of it here. But there's this massive army coming. Okay, massive army. And let's go back to chapter 16 again. This is another one of these spots where Jehoshaphat learned from his dad. Chapter 16 and verse 1. In the 36th year of the reign of Asa, Baasha, king of Israel, came up against Judah and built Ramah that he might let none go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. And Asa brought silver and gold from the treasuries of the house of the Lord and of the king's house, and sent them to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, who dwelt in Damascus, saying, "Let there be a treaty between you and me." So here, his dad, he's seen his dad when there's this army, this big army coming against him. His dad turns to the Syrians and says, "Hey, how about we make a deal here? You help me out." Right? That was his first move. That was his first act, was to turn to Syria. We fast forward to chapter 20, right? But that's not Jehoshaphat's response. Verse 3, Jehoshaphat feared and set himself to seek the Lord and proclaimed a fast throughout all Judah. And so Judah gathered together to ask help from the Lord. And from all the cities of Judah, they came to seek the Lord. His response is not to go outside and look for help. His response was and this is point 6, put yourself completely in God's hands. Put yourself completely in God's hands. Hard things are going to come. Trials are going to come. Right? That's just part of life. By the time these trials came, right, Jehoshaphat was in the practice of depending on God. When the hard times come, you want that to be your habit. You want that to be your go-to mode, where the first thing is, I'm going to depend on God. God is the one, the source of my help. Right? Not the Syrians, not whatever other things that are out there that look like they could really be helpful to you. It's God. And that was his first response. You want that to be your first response. Verse 5. The Jehoshaphat stood in the assembly of Judah and Jerusalem in the house of the Lord before the new court. And he prays. And he prays this prayer in front of the people. We're not going to read through the whole thing because, frankly, I can't do it. Verse 9. 2 Chronicles 20, verse 9. He says, "If disaster comes upon us, sword, judgment, pestilence, or famine, he says, we'll stand before this temple and in your presence. If for your name is in this temple, and cry out to you in our affliction, and you will hear and save. So they literally go and stand before the house of God, right? And all the people are there, and that's what they're looking to, right? They're looking to God and saying, you're the one that will help. You're the one that will save, right? And then look in verse 13. So he prays his prayer, and he says, you know, we're looking to you. And verse 13, it just says, now all Judah with their little ones, their wives and their children, it says they stood before the Lord. So you get, it doesn't tell us how long they stood, but you get the sense that there's just this stillness. They go before God and they say, here's where we're at, right? We really don't have any way out of this. And they make their case before God, and then they just stand and wait. They stand and wait. And then in verse 14, right? We don't know how long they stood and waited. I'd love to know. But verse 14, then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jahaziel, the son of Zechariah, the son of Benaiah, the son of Jael, the son of these guys. And he says, listen, all you of Judah and you inhabitants of Jerusalem, and you, King Jehoshaphat, thus says the Lord, do not be afraid nor dismayed because of this great multitude, for the battle is not yours but God's. Tomorrow, go down against them. So God answers them, and then he says, this is his battle. But, he says, tomorrow go down against them. They'll surely come up by the ascent of Ziz, and you will find them at the end of the brook before the wilderness of Jeruel. He says, okay, this is my battle. I will fight it for you. But he still gives them something to do. He doesn't say, hey, just hang out here for a little while. I'll take care of it. He tells them, you don't have to worry about anything. But you do need to go out. You need to take action. There's a role for you to play. And there's a really cool role for them to play. Let's get there. Verse 20 says, so they rose early in the morning and they went out. And as they went out, Jehoshaphat stood and said, hear me, O Judah, and you inhabitants of Jerusalem, believe in the Lord your God, and you shall be established before his... you shall be established. He's telling them... He is instructing them in dependence. He's telling them, depend on God. Fully depend on him. You will be established. Believe his prophets, and you shall prosper. Verse 22. Here's their job. Here's their role. They wanted, God sent them out to take action, and here's what they did. When they began to sing and to praise, the Lord set ambushes against the people of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir, who had come against Judah, and they were defeated. Their job was to go out and sing. Right? That was the role they had. They still had to go out and do something. They had to go out and praise God. And it says, as they began to sing, God sets these ambushes for them, and their enemies are defeated. By the time they get there, everybody's dead. It says not one person survived. It was complete deliverance. God delivered them completely. But here's what we learn through that whole story. Here's what we learn about dependence on God. Here's what it requires. You have to trust. You have to trust in his presence and his power. You have to trust that he is the one who can save and will save. You have to seek him first as the only source of deliverance. He might bring it about through people and through other means, but he is the source of deliverance, the only source. After you seek him, you have to wait for his answer. We don't know how long we have to wait, but there's a stillness period where you wait for his answer. And then, after you have that answer, you need to act on whatever direction he gives you. Whatever he provides, right? Either through his word, through his laws, through his precepts and judgments. Those are the things that drive our actions, that need to fuel us. And in doing that, right, in doing all of those things, we will have been fully dependent on God at every step of the way, in all that we decide and all that we think and all that we do. Complete dependence on God produces right actions. And it makes accountability a joy. If you fully depended on God and acted based on that dependence, then when you go to give an account of yourself to anyone, but especially to God, right, it's a joy. Right? Imagine Jehoshaphat being able to look back on these moments, right, and being able to give account and say, I even when I really made these dumb mistakes, right, I relied on you. I mean, and we have the account. The account is given to us even to learn from. And it's really beautiful. Dependence on God and accountability brings a reward as well. Chapter 21. And Jehoshaphat rested with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. So if you do everything right, you can get buried with your parents. No, that's not the reward you're looking for, is it? It's I joke. That was a joke. But in his society, right, this was actually a really big deal. Look at verse 20. This is talking about his son. It's the end of his son's reign. He was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 8 years, and to no one's sorrow departed. However, they buried him in the city of David, but not in the tombs of the kings. Right? In their day and age, this what it says about him that he rested with his fathers and was buried with his fathers, this is honor that was given to him. He rested in the tomb of David. His bones are somewhere there alongside the bones of King David. Right? His son, somewhere else. Right, it was a disgrace. It was dishonor to be separated from those that went before you. The burial with your parents isn't exactly what you're after. Psalm 23 maybe is a little more of what we're after. You know Psalm 23, I hope. The 23rd Psalm, probably the most famous psalm. Definitely, if we're using number of hymns in the hymnal as a metric based on a psalm, this is the most popular psalm. I think, is it four? Four, at least. Maybe five, four? Okay, yeah. So, Psalm 23, this is a psalm of dependence. This is a psalm of complete dependence from the perspective of a sheep depending on its shepherd. The very end of this psalm, verse 6, says, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life." And the title, "I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Right? That's the goal. The goal is actually to live in your parents' house forever. It really is. But it only comes from depending fully and completely. So I guess my hope and my prayer for all of our young people is that you grow in full and complete dependence on God the Father and on Jesus Christ, his Son.